Welcome to Greatness, where the world's leading thinkers share their ideas about how to create greatness, great leaders, great teams, and great organizations. Why be good when you can be great? This is Gretchen Gagel, and I am so excited today to welcome Maya Rosenquist, Senior Vice President with Mortenson Construction, to the Greatness Podcast. Welcome, Maya.
Thanks, Gretchen. Really excited about being here.
Yeah. So Maya and I have known each other for years. I'm at that point in my life where I stopped counting up how many years I've known people, but we've known each other for quite some time. And I was prompted to record this podcast with you because of a LinkedIn post that I saw. But before we get to that, I always love to have our listeners hear a little bit about the background of the person that I'm interviewing. So Maya, you run a very significant construction division for Mortenson Construction. You're probably, gosh, given my 35 years in the industry, one of the highest ranking women that I know in construction. How did you end up in the construction industry?
Yeah, so I came into the business somewhat by accident. So my background is, maybe I'll even start before I fell into construction, just because my dad was a commercial fisherman, and I fished with him up in the Bering Sea for all through my upbringing in middle school and high school, and that's how I paid for college. And so that's relevant in this conversation because I, from a very early age, was in a male-dominated industry that frankly makes construction look like it doesn't have a gender disparity. And so thought I wanted to be an architect when I went to college. And then after a couple years of school and the architecture focus, just thought, you know, this isn't really the fit that I think, you know, I'm going to love for the rest of my life. And so talked to the counselors and they encouraged me to look at construction management. And, you know, when I was 20, I didn't know that construction management was a thing. And, you know, just took a leap of faith there. But that's ultimately what I got my degree in. I started working for Mortenson when I was 20. So I've been in the industry for 27 years, came up through the operations side of the business. But yeah, have a lot of great and amazing stories and have had my own journey as it relates to being a woman in this field.
Wow. This is why I love asking these questions. I had no idea that you grew up fishing with your dad, and all the conversations we've had that never came up. But it's interesting. My father was an equipment dealer in the construction industry. And so I kind of grew up around contractors, and his favorite technique for selling iron was to get as many contractors in a suite at Arrowhead Stadium and start feeding them liquor and sell them pieces of equipment. And so I got to, that was back in the 70s, a long time ago.
Yeah, I think our foundations are so relevant as it relates to how we do in our industry. Like, and for me, I feel like I was probably more ready for this industry because of that upbringing than many in the industry were probably ready for me. And so, yeah, it really matters where your perspective is coming from.
Well, yeah. So my father, my famous story, and my father's passed away, but I told the story on the news once in Denver when he was watching, but I forgot that I'd called him and said I was going to be on the news. Someone asked me if things had gotten better for women. And I said, well, you know, my father, when I told him I was going to go to engineering school, told me I couldn't do that because girls didn't do that. And that I needed to go get my MRS instead and find the guy that was going to take care of me. And I said, well, this is bleep, bleep. And I went to engineering school. So I credit my father with making me the strong woman that I am today. He was in the end happy about me going to and supportive of me going to engineering school, but he didn't think it was a good idea at the time. He really thought I'd lost my marbles when I left engineering school and went to run a dog food plant in Oklahoma. You know, my glamour days of being in a smelly dog food plant. So this LinkedIn post that you posted, you and I are, I'm in Denver, or you're in Denver. I wish I was in Denver. You're in Denver. I'm in Australia. So I've been over here for almost 3 years now, and we haven't seen each other in a while. But it's been interesting to see in Australia the recognition of the need to change our culture. And I was telling you before we started recording that I've joined this committee over here, the Construction Industry Culture Task Force. I've actually gotten re-engaged with the AGC, Associated General Contractors in the U.S., around their culture of care that we're trying to think about how to make systemic change happen in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. And frankly, after 35 years in manufacturing and construction, it's like, wow, we're still having these conversations. And so you put a post up on LinkedIn about a specific project and the number of women that you have working on that project. Tell us about that post and that project.
Yeah, for sure. So that post was related to our data center that we're building with Facebook in Eagle Mountain, Utah. It's a mega scale, hyperscale data center. And so a combined $1.5 billion worth of work that we currently have ongoing out there. And we have a craft workforce that is currently about 140 team members. I think at the time I posted that, we were at about 130 team members. And so we're pushing close to 35 women on our craft workforce. And that's super intentional from our standpoint. I am privileged to work with our craft resource manager is actually a woman as well. Her name is Kedmia Milam. She's awesome, but this is a passion that we both share in terms of helping women be successful in the craft and in the field in our business. And so it's something I know she puts a lot of energy into. And we have a lot of support from all of our team members in terms of recognizing that this is something that needs to change. We are looking for a broader pipeline in terms of people that can be successful in the industry. And we need to be intentional about it as well.
So this is what I'm really curious about, because I've heard it in the United States and I've heard it here in Australia. We just can't find women to do the work. We just can't find the pipeline. And so when I saw your post, it's like, well, Maya has cracked this code in some way, right? I mean, you're not at 50-50, but still having 35 trade women on this site out of 140 is a big deal. So when you say intentional, what have you done to accomplish this?
Well, and so our project in Utah is actually partnered with our Denver office. And this is something that we've been working on for a number of years, where we're actively recruiting and sourcing and looking for a pipeline for women that can be successful in the field. And for me, my passion is definitely around equity in the field. Because I am so tired of looking at women open the gate, run the elevator, clean the floors, and just having these very low-level jobs that they don't see a career or a opportunity to really climb the ladder. And so we have a long ways to go, but we are making progress as it relates to women tradespeople that are foremen with our organization, really showing them what a long-term career path can look like. We've got, you know, women operators, surveyors, laborers, cement masons, carpenters, and helping build a skill set that is going to allow them really a career in our business, which I think is what everybody's looking for, not just an, you know, hourly opportunity.
It's so interesting. When I left the construction industry for a short time, mostly to get off a plane and finish raising my kids, and I ran the Women's Foundation in Colorado, and we were working to help lift women out of poverty and give them an opportunity to be financially successful. How do I support my kids? And finding these jobs that are in these career opportunities, like you said, that can provide for a woman, provide for a family, I just think it's remarkable. And I think that people getting creative, right before I moved to Australia, I was at some industry event, probably the Construction User Roundtable or the Construction Industry Institute. And a gentleman with ABC, I want to say Arkansas, Louisiana, somewhere in that area, they had gone after high school girls and their low-income moms and trying to recruit them into the trades as a pair. Because then they had a built-in support network. Mm-hmm. They, you know, if you could get the mom and the daughter to train to be an electrician or a plumber or something like that, that they would be even more likely to come into the industry and stay in the industry. And I think that's the creativity that I think sometimes we're just not thinking outside the box enough.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually a really interesting strategy. I think that having a support network, I know, is very important and something that we continually get feedback from our women in the trades as well, in terms of just making sure that they have others that understand maybe there's needs that are different for our women in the field than for our men. And we were just having this conversation actually as it related to Women in Construction Week a couple weeks ago, where we brought our tradeswomen in to have a conversation about what those needs might be different than the rest of the demographic on the job site. And so having an advocate is really important. Having a support network is important. I think seeing successful women in the field as well. And so how we grow more female superintendents and having women foremen is really important as well, right? In terms of making sure that people are starting to see advancement and opportunities in a lot of different places.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I spoke at the Groundbreaking Women in Construction, ENR's conference, probably 4 or 5 years ago with a woman who did a film called Hard-Hatted Woman. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of this film.
I have.
Yeah, have you? And it was fascinating. I didn't see the whole thing. She was raising money for the post-production, but the fact that a woman apprentice, that the apprentice was the one that got the coffee. But if you were a woman, you got the coffee for 5 years. Like you never got out of the cycle of getting the coffee. And all those, all the bias that women face on construction projects, I thought it was a really interesting project.
Yeah, it is. In fact, I actually have a meeting with her coming up. I think for me, there are also choices that we need to make related to what the future looks like, right? And so, I mean, I have more sad stories and horrible stories that no one would want to even, you know, think about, like how a 20-year-old got through like a given situation. I think a lot of us have challenging and difficult stories that make up our past. And I think, you know, recognizing that, but also thinking about what is the inspiration of the future in terms of what are we creating to encourage women to see themselves being successful in construction is also like, how do we complement those together is a big part of where I really would like to see us, you know, focus more on what are the successes that we're seeing out there and really that, you know, change in culture, change in environment that that we're seeing in the places that we are putting that intentionality and effort into making a change.
Yeah, that's why I loved your LinkedIn post. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do is lift up these stories of success mm-hmm. and say, yes, it can be done. So you and I have been hanging out at conferences like Construction User Roundtable, and I've been the keynote speaker there. And it's not atypical for me to be standing in front of 600 or 700 people in the construction industry and looking out into the crowd and not seeing a lot of women executives either. So it's interesting how we work on this whole chain. We were just talking before we got on about the fact that I sit on Brinkman Construction's board there in Colorado, mm-hmm. hopefully working on getting back for a board meeting in July. I think they'd like me to be able to show up in person again at some point. But I was actually their first outside board member. And when the Hugh Rice recommended me for that at FMI, and when the recruiter called me, my first question to him was, did you tell them I'm a woman? I mean, this would be really unusual for a construction company to bring a woman on as their first outside director, but they did, and they're very progressive and they see the need for diversity on their board. Mm-hmm. So what can we be doing at every level, do you think, to support women in our industry? At every level within these organizations?
Yeah, I think there's a lot we can be doing, right? And so I do think that having an understanding of your metrics is really important and having an understanding of your metrics at every level, because I think some larger construction companies that are fairly progressive in this space have great metrics related to supervisory positions and they forget the craft, right? And that's part of why I have an interest in focusing on the craft is if you have, say you have a craft workforce of 100 people and if you only have 7 women, right? So maybe you're barely meeting the federal standard, but that's not fantastic. And there's none of them that are in a leadership position. Well, that's not fantastic either. And I think, you know, having to put those metrics up to a board and explain, well, why would that be the case? Because the reasons that I think people gave for explanation about lack of pipeline and lack of opportunity 10 years ago, 20 years ago, really don't fit today. They're just the things that people are used to saying, though. And I think for us to change the world in terms of what we see in the future, we do have to be thinking about, okay, where is there opportunity for us to recruit differently, train differently, give opportunity to people differently, look differently in the future. And so that I think baselining your metrics is a big part of it. I think baselining your advancement, right, is another big part of it. And so if you're looking at how long does it typically take your average team member to become a project manager or a superintendent, is that different when you start to sort that by demographic? And having a real and honest conversation about why would there be differences there, or, you know, how can I be aware of them? And maybe there is unconscious bias that is buried in your organization. But if you're starting to look at your metrics and your stats in a very transparent way, I think you can start having the tough conversations even with yourself around why would that be the case?
Yeah, I think that's such great advice. So one of the fun things I've done over here, my first speech was at the Australian Pipeline and Gas Association 2 weeks after I got here in Darwin, which is a kind of a remote part of Australia. And the CEO had a panel of industry executives, and Steve Davies said, "I'm embarrassed that there's not a woman on this panel." He said that in front of the entire audience. So I took him out for coffee the next month and said, "Hey, let's start a women's leadership program. The American Gas Association has one, and I've spoken there a couple of times. And long story short, we've run 74 women through this program. We're about to kick off another 26. But they've increased their female membership from 19 to 23% in 2 years. And that's a big leap. And we're actually, we always pair up the women's events with regular networking events, and we all go together, 25 of us go together. And someone said to me one night at a cocktail party, they're like, "Wow, there's a lot of women at this cocktail party." I'm like, "Yeah, doesn't it look really cool?" Right?
Yeah.
It's really created a strong network for them and shining a spotlight on women and advancing women in the pipeline industry over here. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. But I think you're absolutely right. If you're not measuring it, how are you ever going to tackle the issue? I think you need to have those metrics.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to complement, right? That's kind of the black and white of it. But there's opportunity to complement that with a strategy around sponsorship and mentorship and really how you're pulling people up within an organization in a, you know, very strategic way, or thinking about how you're building their capabilities to be successful at the next role. And so, I think there's other strategies that maybe are on the softer side that are affinity groups, kind of like what you're describing. And so it isn't one thing, right? It's many, many things that are needed to start making a change and really, creating the picture that we want the future to look like.
Yeah. Well, the Australian Constructors Association over here did a really bold thing. They wanted more women on their board. So they had, I think it was an almost entirely male board at the time. They had every board member name a co-board member that was female. So it immediately made their board 50-50 male, female. And I think that was a pretty bold, John Davies, who's their first CEO, who's just hired. I think they're the 13 largest constructors here in Australia. And I think they're really trying to set the tone for the industry.
Yeah.
And I think bold actions like that speak volumes. So Maya, I want to shift gears just a little bit, because not only are you an advocate for women, but you're just an incredible leader. I mean, there's a reason that you're probably, I don't know if this is still the case, but you're probably running more construction for Mortenson than anybody else in the country. You're running billions of dollars worth of construction, right?
That's probably not true, but that's generous, Gretchen, but thank you.
Well, but you're an incredible leader. I've seen you as a leader, and I'm teaching leadership here at the Australian National University. I continue to teach leadership and ethics at the University of Denver, which is fun to stay connected to students in the United States. What are some of the things that make you the leader that you are, that you, because you're taking a leadership role in implementing the strategy around diversity and inclusion for your organization? What are those core values or tenets of leadership that really drive you as a leader?
Yeah, I think for me, authenticity is really core to my leadership, and really you know, being true to myself, and but also being grounded in our company's values and principles. I mean, we have an amazing program that we started a few years ago that's called Lead Blue, and it's really about leadership development for our team members. And I'm on the executive committee for that. But there were, you know, really, you know, three principles that are the core of that program. And so that starts with do the right thing. And then it includes we before me, and then inspiring what's possible. And it took us a long time to you know, really come to agreement on those principles, because they were so important, and we knew that they were going to be so foundational for our company. I think do the right thing is the one that I connected with the most, and it's the one that meant the most to me, because it just embodied who Mort was as a person, as a leader, as kind of, he wasn't the founder of our company, but he was really the person who made the company what it is today. You know, Mort passed about a year and a half ago, and those principles were actually identified before he passed, but that anyone who knew him, like, they would all say the same thing when they talk about, you know, describe Mort's leadership, you know, style. And that was, I think, the thing that really just, I think, grounds every Mortensen leader around, you know, kind of who we are, but also who we want to be, from the aspirational, context as well. And so, it's just been exciting to see the change in, I think, the company in terms of recognizing the responsibility that we have to grow and create leaders in the future. The conversation around, you know, gender advancement and advocation in the industry is one that, you know, has been a journey for me, because frankly, when I started in the industry 27 years ago, that was not a conversation I wanted to have. I wasn't interested in it. I didn't want to participate in a women's group. And it took me a long time to get to a place of recognizing I have a responsibility based on my role within the organization, within the industry, to change it. And so in the last 10 years, I've really tried to embrace the, you know, what comes with the responsibility and being in that position, but it wasn't one that was natural to me. I've tried to be super intentional, around changing others within the industry that are outside of Mortensen. And so whether that is talking to trade partners that we work with, peers that we work with, our competitors, customers, around maybe thinking about things differently. And sometimes outside voices can push you differently than maybe an internal voice would. But it was definitely a journey and an evolution for me that was not where I thought I would be if you asked me 20 years ago.
Yeah, you and I are very similar in that way. So I was the first female operations manager at Ralston Purina out of 62. And I was the second woman hired at FMI. I was hired at FMI in 1994. And I did. I dressed like the guys, I think, back to wearing khakis and blue blazers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes me laugh now. But I, you know, you're just fighting your own battle. Not fighting your own battle, but just doing your own thing and just wanting to be recognized as a person. And I reached that same point. Isn't that interesting that you and I had that similar journey? When I approached the Australian Pipeline and Gas Association about starting this women's leadership program, I knew that I risked branding myself as a women's leadership person here in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I had to take a deep breath and say, wow, I'm starting over in a new country. I consult to engineering and construction firms and large owners, General Motors, Procter & Gamble, on how to effectively build out capital programs. I'm not a women's leadership person. And then I thought, this is a way to really be impactful in the industry. I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, who cares if I'm branded as a women's leadership person?
Yeah.
It's just important to do. So it's been really great.
I think kind of maybe a similar journey from the standpoint of there's a lot of stuff I care about in this industry and a lot of stuff that, you know, I want to make a difference on. I think because of the position that I hold with Mortensen in terms of, especially coming from an operations background, you know, my voice probably carries the farthest on some of our women's issues. But yeah, I remember I was doing an interview for somebody a couple years ago and I said, you know, I just want to be known as being a badass for being a badass, right? Like, I don't want it to be because like, oh, you're a great woman leader. I want right. it to be because I'm a great leader. And I think that's what all women are looking for, right? We're not looking to be recognized as being a woman in the business. We're looking to be recognized for being awesome.
Yeah, isn't that so true? So one other point I want to dig into just a little bit, because I wrote a book about working moms. I originally wrote the book 15 years ago for a girlfriend that was having her first kid. And she came to me and she said, at the time I was flying every week. I flew every week until my kids were 7 and 8 years old with FMI. And she said, "You've got it all together. You know, tell me how you do this." And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's such a facade. I'm like one sick nanny day away from complete disaster. Yeah. And I realized we were all looking at each other thinking everybody had it all figured out. Why am I the only one that's struggling? And that's why I wrote the book and did the TEDx, which raises money for Warren Village in Denver, that great nonprofit that supports single moms and their kids. And we were just talking about our kids prior to starting recording. That's the first thing we caught up on, right? You have three children, and I have kids that are, my daughter's about to turn 24 in 15 days, 16 days, and my son's 25. What advice do you have out there for working moms that are maybe thinking, oh my gosh, I'm a failure as a mom this day, or I'm a failure as an executive that day? Or because I know I've not talked to a woman yet who's a working mom who hasn't had those feelings, unless you're super mom and have figured this all out, Maya.
Yeah, no, certainly I am not. I think you get this question a lot, right? Around, especially executive women is with children is the, like, I don't know how she does it. Question, which, I mean, my advice would be nobody is knocking it out of the park, right? It is a master juggling, multitasking, just adventure that we are all on. And I think, you know, women in general can tend to be really good multitaskers. And so we're putting our skills to work in terms of juggling everything. I say this to all of our male leaders, and I say it to our female leaders too, from the standpoint of being mom is different than being dad. And I mean, even if you have a stay-at-home dad situation, I mean, I have a lot of colleagues who have that situation, but being mom is different. And you are the first call the school makes, the doctor's office makes, you know, making the appointments to get the kids where they need to go typically falls on your shoulders. And so it has been really interesting, especially with COVID, to look at the disproportional impacts that working moms have. I'd say, you know, having a network out there and understanding what others are doing is a big part of the key to success. I mean, for me, my oldest is, he turns 19 next month. I had all three of my kids. I was working on a job site when I was pregnant with them up until the day before I delivered. And there weren't a lot of other role models or examples that I could ask about what our maternity program looked like, what, childcare options were successful, or what to be thinking about in terms of being a mom in my career and the impact that was going to have on my career progression, right? Like, so the world looked way different back then. Now I'm super excited about what it looks like. I mean, we have so many really successful moms working for us, and there's advice that I give them in terms of like how much time I think they need to be taking off or what to be thinking about in terms of balancing the world in the future. But also I think just talking to others in terms of what makes it work. So I remember, this is probably 2 years ago, I was talking to one of our project managers at the time, and she was really, her husband works for us as well. And she was really struggling with how do both of us get out the door and get to the job site super early. I'm always the one that has to get the kids to school. And, you know, my husband is there early and I, you know, I'm not able to get to the job until like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I had suggested to her, I was like, have you considered a, you know, early morning nanny, you know, somebody who would get to the house at 5:30 in the morning and, you know, be there till the kids got picked up from the bus at, you know, 8 o'clock or whatever it was. And you could tell like the lights just went on off in her eyes of like, oh my God, no, I had no idea that that was a thing. And I was like, yep, that's a thing, you know, check it out. Let me know what you think. And maybe it's going to be helpful. And I saw her like a couple months later and she's like, oh my God, this was a life changer for their family because it allowed her to start her workday the way that she wanted to. And so, and she still could leave at a reasonable time and make sure that she still was having the right work-life balance. But I think those little things that sometimes talking to somebody else who's been there and done that, are, you know, huge in terms of we don't all have to, you know, figure it out for ourselves every single time. And so I found that super helpful.
Yeah, it is so interesting. My book, The 8 Steps to Being a Great Working Mom, I interviewed 25 women because I didn't want it just to be my perspective mm-hmm. about things. But I think of a similar story. My friend who is an attorney, really struggling. And I said, hey, our nanny's looking for some extra work. Why don't you have her do your laundry and babysit every Saturday night? And just having someone do her laundry for her, it was, once again, it's a game changer. It's just one thing that's not on your plate anymore.
Yeah.
And it is men and women. I spoke to the SMACNA board I think it was in the Bahamas or someplace. And one of them said, hey, we split a job. A guy wanted to coach his son in soccer. So we had another guy go travel to the job for the first half of it. And then when the guy's son's soccer season was over, they swapped out and the other guy went and traveled for it. So I think it is getting creative because we're all trying to be the best parent, the best. You know, I went through 10 years of dementia with my mother and stepped down as assistant dean at DU when she was in the last stages of Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Because once again, had to throw the white flag in too. You know, can't take care of everything, but yeah, those support networks. Maya, it's been so wonderful. I mean, literally I could talk to you for another hour, and I'm so glad that this LinkedIn post prompted me reaching out to you just because it's great to see you too and reconnect. As our listeners out there, being male, female, as you said, you are a great leader, not just a great woman leader. You are a great leader. What is your advice for how we continue to just step up in the industry and make this the industry that we all care so deeply about, that we all were attracted to construction because we build and maintain the assets of society and we're trying to make it the best place that we can be? What's your advice to the leaders of our industry that are listening to this?
Yeah, I think my advice would be, I think we have the power to set the vision and the strategy to execute upon that. And I think that that is going to look different in the future than maybe the good old boy club that it looked like 20 or 30 years ago. And the excuses of the past in terms of why we didn't think that we could find the right workforce or, you know, have people be successful in our industry isn't going to cut it in the future. There is an expectation that everyone can be successful. And that is what I love about our business. There is a role for everyone to be successful in our industry. And so I think how we can be more inclusive, and that includes women, that includes people of color, that includes the LGBT community. There's a lot of progress that we've made, but there's also a lot of opportunities for us to continue to raise the bar in terms of what being a construction professional looks like. And I mean that from apprentice to, you know, CEO and everybody in between. There absolutely is an opportunity for us to change the landscape if we put our minds to it.
Great. We are so fortunate to have you as a leader in the industry. Mortenson really knocked it out of the park when they made a decision to hire you 27 years ago. I have so much admiration for you, and I can't wait till I'm back in Denver and we can sit down and have a glass of wine together. Thank you so much, Maya, for joining us today.
Yes, Gretchen, it was great to catch up with you as well. I will look forward to that glass of wine in Colorado. And it's great to see that you're doing so well.
Interested in hearing more? Visit us at greatnessconsulting.com. Thank you.